Hello and welcome to the Mejlis Podcast, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Bruce Panier, host of the Mejlis and author of the weekly Central Asia in Focus newsletter. The Turkmen government has been a chronic rights violator. So many activists and government critics have been imprisoned over the last 30 years that few in Turkmenistan even attempt to challenge anything the government says or does. But it is necessary to continue raising the cases of those who have been wrongly imprisoned in Turkmenistan to remind people outside Turkmenistan what's happening, and because sometimes outside pressure does help to get some people released from jail. To discuss all this, I am joined by Rachel Denberg, Deputy Director of Human Rights Watch's Europe and Central Asia Division, Ivar Dale, Senior Policy Advisor at the Norwegian Helsinki Committee, and Faruk Yusupov, Director of RFARL's Turkmen Service, known locally as Asatlik. Thank you all for joining me, and I'm going to start with Ivar because you have a case that you've been following for a while, and you wanted to discuss this to open our conversation.
Yeah, thank you, Bruce. Yes, I do have one particular case that's been on my mind recently, and I know Rachel also is very concerned about it, and we have been for years, and it's the case of a man called Gulgeldi Ananyazov, and the reason why this is particularly close to my heart, this whole story, is because he used to live in Norway, where I'm from. His family still lives here, but he's been in prison in Turkmenistan for now 16 years. And it's a story that is just completely, really awful when you think about the fact that they've really just taken a quarter of this guy's life away from him. And I met Gulgeldi the first time. It was back, I think, in the very late 2007. I was living in Bishkek in Kyrgyzstan at that time, working for the Norwegian Helsinki Committee. And he came from Norway. As you recall, President Niyazov had died a while before. And he was encouraged, Gulgeldi was encouraged by news that the new president, Gurbanguly Berdimuhamedov, he had just been to the U.S. and he made a speech at Columbia University where he said, promising things about the future of Turkmenistan. He was talking about democratic reforms, the country is open to the world, and so on. And so I guess Gulgeldi, who had political asylum in Norway at that time, he thought that he would be able to go back to Turkmenistan and contribute to this new Turkmenistan that he imagined was going to come. And he wanted, you know, international organizations like the NHC to be aware of the fact that he was going back there. And I remember he showed up at our office in Bishkek, and I took him out to lunch at a Georgian restaurant in Bishkek. And we talked about this, and I said, you know, I think this sounds very risky. I would advise against it. You don't know, you know, are these reforms for real? But he decided to go, and we heard nothing from him until the news came out that he had, of course, been arrested as soon as he entered the country. And several months later, he was sentenced then to 11 years prison for illegal border crossing to a country that he is a citizen of. And over the years, we've heard very little. At times, we heard so little that, you know, both we in the international human rights community and indeed his family back in Norway thought that he had probably died in prison. Then after 11 years, we got the news that he had not died. On the contrary, he had served his full sentence and was now transferred, and but not released as he should have been, but transferred to serve yet another 5 years in a kind of an exile in an extremely remote, difficult part of Turkmenistan, where he still is. And we fear that, I was just looking through the history of all this, and we've raised it, you know, Human Rights Watch has raised it, we've raised it, it's raised in absolutely every imaginable channel internationally, through the United Nations, through the OSCE, EU, the Norwegian Ministry of Foreign Affairs has raised it with Turkmenistan a number of times. And the last time I've been allowed to say this on air, the Norwegian MFA had a meeting with Vice Foreign Minister of Turkmenistan just right before Christmas. And they asked again, please, can you let this guy go back to Norway and to his family? And nothing has happened again. So I was looking at through the history of all this, and I realized that at that lunch that I had in Bishkek with Gulgeldi, he was at that time the same age that I am now. But today he is 63 years old. The average life expectancy for men in Turkmenistan is 68, and that's if they have not spent a quarter of their life in prison. So I fear that, you know, I wonder what the intentions of Turkmen authorities are by now in the case of Kulgeldi and Yusuf.
Thank you. Richard, you're free to add anything you want to this, but I also wonder if you could talk about, you know, this is certainly not an isolated case. Can you give our audience an idea of, you know, what the general situation is in Turkmenistan for people like this?
So I just like to add one more detail to the really comprehensive and moving summary that Ivar just gave, and that's that several years ago, there were amendments to the Turkmen Criminal Code that had actually reduced the sentence for one of the two crimes of which Gulgeldi had been convicted, the crime of illegal border crossing. So the sentence was, in fact, it was quite drastically reduced, and it was drastically enough reduced such that he should have been, you know, given the time that he'd already served, plus the time he's now been in his internal exile, there's absolutely no reason why Gulgeldi is not fully restored to freedom. You know, the current sentence for that crime, even though he should never have been convicted in the first place, has been reduced. There should be no further hold on him. So I just wanted to clarify that. So just to widen the lens a little bit, Turkmenistan is, you know, for decades has been one of the most closed and repressive countries in the world. It has a government from Niyazov through Berdimuhamedov Per, and now through Serdar Berdimuhamedov, does not tolerate any kind of any dissent, any criticism, any independent reporting, scrutiny, political participation, nothing. And it punishes it quite severely. So the government goes after various sorts of people individually. I think mainly it tries to suppress freedoms to such an extent that people simply don't have the opportunity or don't have, you know, don't want to take any kind of risk to, you know, to in any way stand out or to seek or to impart information that might be in any way at variance with what the government says or what the government wants. Some of the most extreme cases that we have come across that we're dealing with are cases of people who were imprisoned quite early, still during the Niyazov era, who were imprisoned for either many of them for an alleged coup attempt back in 2002 and for other sins of, you know, falling out of favor with the government or being, you know, high level, political figures or public figures accused of a range of crimes. And they were, you know, convicted, sentenced to very long prison terms, and in many cases have been forcibly disappeared in Turkmenistan's prison system. So that, and what's that mean? That means that after their trials, which were mostly in secret, they had no visits with family, no letters to or from family, no, nothing official anyway. Family members don't have any official information about the fate or whereabouts of their loved ones. So that really amounts to an enforced disappearance. And, you know, since in some of these cases, the highest profile of these cases include the former foreign minister, Boris Shikhmuradov, the former Turkmen ambassador to Austria, and then also to OSCE, Batur Berdiev, also Boris Shikhmuradov's brother, Konstantin Shikhmuradov, and many others. So the Prove They Are Alive campaign, of which the Norwegian Helsinki Committee and Human Rights Watch are constituent, numerous constituent groups, has estimated there have been a total of at least 162 people forcibly disappeared in that way since 2002. So, you know, for some of them, that's more than 20 years. And it's like the old Stalinist practice of locking people up and throwing away the key without the right to correspondence, you know, без права переписи. So that's an urgent concern for us, obviously, because a forced disappearance is a crime. It's an international crime. It's a potential crime against humanity. And so far, we know that at least 27 of the people who are on our list have already died. We also know that, and this is why it's especially urgent, the sentences of at least three dozen of the individuals on our list were scheduled to expire in 2022, but we still don't know where their fate or their whereabouts. So maybe they're dead, maybe they're alive. Right. For many years, like Ivar said, people assumed that Gulgadia Ananiazov had not survived, but he did. So, you know, how many others are there rotting away in those prisons whose sentences expired and should be released? Or maybe they have expired and they're in some internal exile and their families don't know where they are. There's, you know, this is it's a crime, and the Turkmen government needs to come clean on this. There are many other individuals who have been prosecuted for blatantly politically motivated reasons and who are not forcibly disappeared, fortunately. There's actually a kind of a bright spot. In December, two people whose cases we had been following were released under amnesty, and that was Hursunay Ismatullayeva, who is a doctor who had been unfairly fired from her job several years ago and tried to get justice, tried to get reinstated. And then a couple of years ago, when there was a briefing on Central Asia at the European Parliament, and her case was flagged during that briefing, the very next day, she was arrested on completely bogus charges and put in prison for several years. But fortunately, she was released, like I said, under presidential amnesty in December. And then another bright spot was the case of Peygamberdi Alaberdiyev, who was a lawyer who was imprisoned, I believe, in 2020, also on bogus charges, likely because of his suspected ties to Turkmen exiles who are politically active. He was arrested on like completely ridiculous charges of getting into a fight with somebody. You know, hooliganism was one of these kind of setups, and he was also released early under amnesty in December. But there are many more who I wish for whom I you know wish I had some good news, and we're still, you know, we will continue to really push for their releases. I should say that there was a huge outpouring of support for Hursunay Ismatullayeva. A lot of people pushed for her release, including maybe especially at the level of the EU, since her case was flagged at an EU briefing, and also on behalf of Alaberdiyev. And so this is why we need to really continue to push for the releases of several other people. And these are, I mean, I can just maybe flag a couple of the cases. One is Nurgaldi Halikov, who is a reporter who contributed to Turkmen News, and passed on a photograph of a visiting delegation by the World Health Organization when they were in Turkmenistan in 2020 on a visit, you know, to assess the country's COVID preparedness. And, you know, because he had passed on that photograph, he was arrested and, you know, tried on, again, just completely ridiculous, trumped up charges of having to do with not paying a debt. And yet he remains in prison. Also, Mansur Mangelov, who's a Bashkor activist who's on very long prison term. Murat Avyezov, Seryozha Babaniazov, and others who are in prison and really need to be released. Ivar, I think you had some interesting news about information about Nurgadi Halikov, about your efforts, right?
Yes, like you mentioned, he ended up in prison in connection with the visit of a delegation of the World Health Organization to Turkmenistan during the COVID pandemic. And he had, as you said, not taken a photo of these delegation members, but merely forwarded a social media post that somebody else made, and ended up in prison for sentenced to 4 years on some other trumped up charges. But what we did was, you know, the impression you're left with is that Turkmen authorities have put this guy in prison as a way of punishment on behalf of the WHO. It's almost as if they imagine that the WHO would want this guy to be punished for forwarding their photo from the Hyatt or whatever hotel it was in Ashgabat. And so we asked the WHO, is there something that you can do about this? Could you speak to the Turkmens yourself and say that we don't want this guy to be in prison on our behalf? And I think it's quite unusual for the WHO to respond to this kind of request. I don't know how many such requests they get, but they did answer, and they say that they'll make an exception here and actually go and speak to the Turkmens, to Turkmen authorities about it in Ashgabat through local UN representatives. So we're definitely going to follow up and see what came of that, because as they also told us that, of course, nobody should be under the impression that the WHO wants something like this to happen, because clearly they don't. So we hope something can come of it. But you know, it's the way it is with Turkmenistan. It's so off the radar in international media, and authorities there, I guess they treat both the Turkmen people and the Turkmenistan state budget as if it was their private property. So I think it's very important every time there is something like this where there's an international angle to it through the UN or whatever it is, we should jump on it, because there's far too little attention that people who are suffering under human rights violations in Turkmenistan are given.
Okay, thank you. And Farouk, I'm going to bring you in now. And of course, you're free to comment on anything that you've heard before, but I'm particularly interested in the case of Ismatullayeva and Alaberdiyev. You know, that they were amnestied. It appears part of this amnesty is neutrality day in Turkmenistan. But I'm still kind of surprised. I mean, I was surprised to see that they both got out. It's not characteristic for the Turkmen government to let these people out. They still had years of their sentences to serve. Were you surprised at that?
Yeah, it was very surprising. You are right. We don't know what made Turkmen authorities to come to that decision, but apparently, as Rachel and Ivar already mentioned, there was this push from the European Union's delegation in the country, and I know that some of the Western embassies were pushing for the release of Ismatullayeva and Alaberdiyev. But in that campaign pressure, Nurgeldi Halikov was one of is in the list of that campaign, and Mingelov is also part of that push. We don't know why Halikov and Mingelov haven't been released, or we don't know if they have not been released either, because we were trying to get information on their fate. Unfortunately, we couldn't. We were only able to confirm that Ismatullayeva and Alaberdiyev were released. I hope that Halikov and Mingelov will be released too. Will be released soon, and many other political prisoners. And another reason, that's my reading, my pure speculation, is that the new Turkmen government is trying. I mean, we've been reporting about this. Is trying to improve the image of the new leader, Serdar Berdimuhamedov, especially in the Western world, to present him as sort of a face of a new Turkmenistan, if not a reformer. And the same thing happened, if you remember, with his father when he first came to power. Everyone was very optimistic that there will be political reforms. And as Ivar mentioned, that made Gulgeldi Ananiyazov think that things are changing at the time. But the release of these two people whose cases were politically motivated gives some hope that there will be some thaw in Turkmenistan, at least for a certain period of time. But we will see. But it was, as you are right, it was quite an achievement by human rights community and international diplomatic community to get some people to freedom.
Okay, thank you. And I want to keep on this topic too, but we have reached a halfway point in our discussion. So it's time for me to remind that this is the Mejlis Podcast, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Bruce Pannier, host of the Mejlis and author of the weekly Central Asia in Focus newsletter. And we're talking about the rights situation in Turkmenistan. And joining me are Ivar Dale, Senior Policy Advisor at the Norwegian Helsinki Committee, Faruk Yusupov, Director of RFARL's Turkmen Service, known locally as Azad Lik, and Rachel Denberg, Deputy Director of Human Rights Watch's Europe and Central Asia Division. And we've been discussing the fact that they just let two people go. Now, I also want to connect some of this. We've talked a little bit about Mansour Mingelov also. The U.S. State Department just announced that they have this initiative, hashtag without just cause, which is a political prisoners campaign. Given the fact that we've seen that pressure has worked to at least to help release, it appears, Ismet Ulayeva and Alaberdiev, are we seeing signs that, do you think, and all of you get a chance at this, are we seeing signs that outside pressure is actually working, or as Faruk suggested, is this just a kind of a ploy with a new leader? But I'm really surprised, because in the past there has been outside pressure to have people released, and it was ineffective entirely. It's worked in other Central Asian countries, not in Turkmenistan. So what do you make of this? Rachel, I'll start with you.
Well, I think the way, maybe one way of looking at this is that nothing will change without outside pressure. That it is absolutely essential, because the Turkmen government otherwise has no reason to release people whom it seems as threats or enemies or whatever, wrongly so, by the way. So outside pressure is an essential, I don't think that releases would happen without it. And then, so it's something that we need to do regardless of what particular set of conditions might or might not materialize to make those releases happen, right? You have to have the pressure there so that when the whatever other combination of conditions internally might be there to make it happen, then we've done our part. So I think that we've seen outside pressure work in other circumstances in Turkmenistan. I mean, you know, there are people who were released at the end of their full sentences. At least they were released. There's no reason why the Turkmen government could very easily have simply rearrested people at that point. So, and you know, and these are also cases, I'm thinking of cases in the past, where the people were detained and arrested and imprisoned or otherwise threatened, and there was a big international campaign on their behalf. I wouldn't say it's always failed. It's just that it's very, very difficult, but it doesn't happen without outside pressure.
Okay, thank you. Faruk, what do you think? Is this a short-term period of mercy in Turkmenistan, or do you think that this is a sign that outside pressure is helping to influence Turkmen government decisions?
Yeah, certainly outside pressure is not hurting. it is, as Rachel said, it's without outside pressure, they wouldn't even bother releasing anyone, even if they wanted to improve the image of Serdar Berdimuhamedov. I hope that it will not last forever. But I hope it will last longer than shorter. But it is, I think it is part of the effort to improve Serdar's image in the West, and it will last as long as the Turkmen government will want to present Serdar as the face of new Turkmenistan. How long it will last? It's hard to say, but I don't think that it will last very long, that it will last for years.
Okay, thanks. And this is a good time to get to Ivar, of course, because you just had a different experience. And also I wanted to mention that since I brought up Mansour Mingelov, he is specifically on a list that the U.S. State Department, on the U.S. State Department's website, of someone that should be brought up. But Ivar, you just had an experience where the person that you were trying to help get out, you had the more typical response from the Turkmen government, where really they didn't do anything about that. How do you feel about the fact that You know, there are people getting let out. Is that room for optimism, or is this, you know, as Farouk said, is this just a short-term thing, and that we won't see any more of for months to come?
Well, of course, we know very little about how people inside the Turkmen government think about these things. Maybe they would have been let out anyway. But I agree with Rachel and Farouk that pressure on Turkmenistan is essential. And I think because without it, I'm sure things would be even worse. What we need is more pressure, because even though we try our best, some organizations in the human rights community keep bringing up Turkmenistan, but it's very little, of course, compared to the amount of attention given to many other countries. And I think it's evident when you look at Turkmenistan, when you look at the elite there, money talks. You know, it's they treat the country's resources as their own private wallet. And I think we have to look more at businesses working in Turkmenistan. I think that's an angle that is could be fruitful. You know, there's been for years, it's been a little bit up to the companies themselves what sort of human rights efforts they want to make. But more recently, people talk about corporate social responsibility, or CSR is dead. Now it's a new era where I think, which is coming, which is where we will be able to put a lot of more demands on companies working in authoritarian countries like Turkmenistan. They should also be at the forefront of trying to get people like Gulgeldi or Halikov out of prison and to improve the human rights situation in these countries where they are making their money.
Bruce, if I may, I wanted to also add to my response about how long it will last. As you know, the day before yesterday, the father, Berdimuhamedov, announced that they want to change the parliamentary system again and go back to unicameral system from the bicameral system, which was established only 2 years ago. So things like politically, the human rights situation will also be very related to the developments coming from that decision. Because they are going to separate this upper chamber that's headed by Gurbanguly Berdimuhamedov at the moment into a separate supreme body of power, body of supreme power, as they call it. And it's going to be the People's Council. If you remember, the same powers were, and of course, the Gurbanguly will be at the helm of that body. If you remember, during the Niyazov's time, the People's Council had the same powers, and Niyazov used it for all of his for establishing the cult of his personality, and then he used it to make him president for life. So the same thing is going to happen, I think, and Gurbanguly Berdimuhamedov is going to become the supreme leader, and he will be making the ultimate decisions, all relating to internal affairs, foreign affairs, military affairs. So this is going to be everything politically, as I say, and including human rights situation will be related to the developments in this issue. So we will see how, and that period of thaw will also be very much dependent on this story.
Yeah, thank you for adding that. It certainly is an ominous development. And thanks for your services reporting on that too. Okay, I want to get to one last thing though, and that's the kind of modern repression that's going on that's associated with technology. Now, inside Turkmenistan, it's really impossible to challenge the government. As I mentioned at the start of the program, you don't even want to be caught in the street saying out loud something that sounds like it's an anti-government statement. It's a sure ticket to jail. But from outside Turkmenistan, using new technology, people have been sending voices of opposition to the government into the country. And yet, one, it's very hard for citizens to see these because of all kinds of blocks people have, the government's imposed on the internet. But the penalties are huge for people that do try to access this. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about the challenges that new technology is posing for the Turkmen government and new areas of rights violations that it's opening up at the same time. And Farouk, I guess I'll get to you first. Am I right that if you are caught with a video or something on your mobile phone that's from a YouTube channel or something that's an anti-Turkmen government propaganda station, you can be imprisoned for treason?
There is a very high risk for that. And in the recent year, there were a lot of cases when a group of police, a joint group of police and Turkmen KGB, they would raid government agencies, public organizations, schools, and would just check people's phones for any political content. And people were punished for that. People were dismissed from work and punished for that. And the same thing happened to, by the way, to Alaberdiev. I mean, he had messages on his phone that he exchanged with the political activists in Turkey. So, yeah, there is a very high risk. I cannot give you the concrete examples because people wanted anonymity out of fear that there would be more consequences for their families. But I know of at least three cases when people got punished, and after they got in touch with us, they were. We lost contact with them. We don't know what happened to them. And another very outrageous example for that, for any sort of public activity, political activity, is the case of Omurzak Umarkuliyev. If you remember, after he established an organization of the Association of Turkmen Students in Turkey, and he spoke about it on Azatlik. He went missing, and then we learned that he was given a sentence of 20 years. Turkmen government claimed that the Azatlik's reporting was not true, and the Omurzak served not the prison sentence, but military service, and is now living his private life. But they never produced any evidence whatsoever that proved that everything is, his fate is okay. Everything turned out to be okay for Umurzak. So they never produced any evidence for that, just claim. So it is not safe in Turkmenistan to be engaged in any civil or political activity. But people do get engaged. Like, people share with us, with each other, the political content. I know that they share what Azatlik produces or what other independent media produces. And one indication for that is that during those raids, police even question like younger children, like children of the first grade, second grade, asking them if they ever saw the logo, and they show Azatlik's logo, if they ever saw the logo, this logo on their parents' telephones. So there is interest in political and civil activity, but the government is trying very hard to stop that.
Bruce, I can add something if we still have time.
Please.
So just to say also that in addition to raiding the institutions that Farouk mentioned to check people's phones, the authorities are also really trying to crack down on, you know, service providers who they believe might be helping people install or providing like VPNs. Like, so VPNs, virtual private networks, aren't explicitly banned in Turkmenistan, but providing illegal services that provide technical programs online is banned, and you can get a 7-year imprisonment, a term of 7-year imprisonment for that. And so like tech service people have been, you know, have been threatened. And in addition to looking for banned content, you know, officials are also looking for banned apps when they go after people. And they're also doing other things to like fully like block, you know, the internet. There were I think there were five consecutive months in 2022, there were like near complete internet there were like big internet disruptions, full or partial internet disruptions. This comes from your website, from Azatlik. And I think there was also a near complete internet shutdown for 2 days in April. Also, I think it's important to mention that like as these services, internet services disappear or become harder, that has impact on sharing of information, but also, you know, it has impact on people's daily lives. And, you know, think of the people who, you know, set up businesses, especially during COVID, you know, for delivery services and things like that, you know, they can't function when there are these big shutdowns. Also, I think just a corollary to what you mentioned, Bruce, is just also obviously the government wants to prevent connection between people inside the country and the exile movement abroad, and they're also working very hard to pressure the exile movement abroad, especially in Turkey. There were attacks this past summer on a group of activists in Istanbul who had gone to the Turkmen consulate to deliver a letter. You know, five of them were like very, very badly beaten. I can only believe that the Turkmen authorities were in cahoots with the Turkish authorities in banning Tajigul Begmedova from the Turkmenistan Helsinki Foundation from entering Turkmenistan. And, you know, there's constant pressure on the Turkmen migrant workers in Turkey, among whom many are, you know, some are like activists, Turkey used to be, one of the few countries that Turkmen citizens could travel to without a visa. And now there's a visa regime. So, you know, you got to wonder why did that happen? You can't help believing that, you know, Turkmenistan wanted to shut down that avenue.
Thank you. And Eva, first I want to mention too that I had to do a piece on the Turkmen media not so long ago, and so I had to read the constitution and the law on media, which guarantees the right to privacy for one thing, and also guarantees that there should be no interference in the dissemination of information. All very, very beautiful words, which no one pays any attention to. But Ivar, I wanted to get to you on this topic too of the new technology. I mean, it seems like Turkmenistan's opened up a new, like I said, a new area of rights violations by doing this. Can you speak about, add a little bit to the penalties and the measures that, you know, the lengths that Turkmen officials go to try to keep the country, keep information from outside the country from getting into the country?
Yeah, curbing access to the internet or certain websites and all of this is one way that they try to keep information from people. But I get the feeling with Turkmenistan that it's not, you know, the lack of public protest against this regime is not due to ignorance of the fact that they're living in one of the world's most repressive countries. People, I think, in Turkmenistan are fully aware of this, but it's fear that is keeping them from speaking out, because you can see what happens to, if you see your countrymen get put away for 16 years for nothing, for crossing the border without their own passport in their pocket. If you see the security services or the treating people as their private property, then, of course, fear will keep people from opening their mouth and from doing something when the reactions are so arbitrary and so serious that they can completely ruin your life and your family's life. Yeah, but people, of course, they do travel to Turkey, quite a few Turkmens, hopefully get access to somewhat more information there. But I think people realize what kind of country they live in comparison to others in the region, maybe. So I think we need to keep up pressure, especially on those who do travel to Turkmenistan or do have outsiders who do have a voice in Turkmenistan or have the ear of the government. They have a moral responsibility to do everything they can. So that's the diplomats, and it's the businesses should do what's possible to improve the general human rights situation there.
Great, thank you. Anything I missed that you want to make as a last comment, Ivar? Start with you. Anything you wanted to say that you haven't had a chance to say yet?
Well, I see the new parliament, or what you want to call it, of Turkmenistan is going to be called the Majlis of Turkmenistan. So I think your podcast was ahead of its time there.
I've got to check the copyright law on that one. Thank you.
Or was it the other way around?
So I'm going to have to check on that. I might file a case. I think they're trying to steal my good publicity. Thank you for bringing that up. Rachel, anything I missed or anything you didn't have a chance to say that you want to say?
Thank you so much for this opportunity, Bruce. There's so much to say about Turkmenistan. We haven't touched on social economic rights, the crisis of affordable food, but we can get to that at another time.
Okay, thanks, Farooq.
Nope. Nothing that I can add.
That's fine. Okay, that's good. All right. Well, then in that case, thank you, Farooq, Rachel, and Ivar for being on the program today. And a big thank you to Nathan Shoemaker, our Mejlis podcast producer in Washington, D.C. And a reminder, you can subscribe to the Mejlis podcast or the Central Asia in Focus newsletter by visiting Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's website at rfarl.org. Thanks, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.